Hey everyone. So we are on our first training call. You got your handouts? So we had to postpone the call because I had a splitting headache on Tuesday. And I actually found out that there were other folks in my area. So the pressure change was really significant on Monday night to Tuesday. And it's one of those ones where you just gotta wait it out and gotta wait for the weather to change. So this is something that sometimes people aren't aware of. So something to be aware of. I have smaller sinuses, so I feel it more. Seth has big sinuses, so he never feels the pressure changes. Lucky guy. And yeah, the full moon was also around that time. That's true. So hello from Minnesota, Pennsylvania, Belgium, New York, Long Island, Georgia, Florida, Sweden, Vancouver Island, Barcelona, Peru, Somerset, Austria, Netherlands, Amsterdam, Nova Scotia, Germany, SoCal, Munich, Colombia, beautiful, Cumbria, which is England. Oh, hey, Salah, Helen, Ontario. So I've got some familiar names here, and no doubt new folks. If you're new to SPSM, maybe let me know in the chat as we get started. We'll just kind of orient to where everybody's at. We've got about 122 people here. And as we do that, some newbies. Who was on Seth's call yesterday? Anybody attend? I heard it was long. It's a long one. So hopefully you learned some stuff. Some new stuff. I know him and Jen were on that call. And yeah, again, like everything, like this call, his calls, they're all recorded, transcribed, and for you to listen to after the fact or titrate through them. So what I'm going to do today, we're going to go through this handout. Again, for those new, it's a very old school fill in the blank. You do not need to fill in the blanks if you don't want to on the training call site. There's always two kinds of handouts, one that has all the answers, one that does not. Mine has the answers. And it's just one way of putting pen to paper. I have found in this online space, I can't learn when I'm just digital. I need a pen, I need a paper, I need a book. Judging by some of the faces here, there are those within my age bracket and older, so you know exactly what I mean. I still haven't even read a book on a Kindle, just not my thing. So I know people love that. So that's why I have these handouts, and feel free to scribble, take notes. You know, that's how we learn from what I've experienced as humans. So we're going to get into that. Again, the chat, we like to keep quiet. I like to keep quiet, but if something comes up and you're like, what? What does she mean? Because I don't do questions on these. That's why Leah's here. And so Leah's here to see those and answer them. But this isn't the place to put a long, 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 long question in about something else. So if you have something that pops up that is not in conjunction with what we're learning today, write that down and pop it in the general questions thread, which is on the site. And our moderating team, they are there to answer your questions, and they like questions and they like to answer them. So don't be shy. That's what you've paid for. You've paid for their support and, of course, the curriculum. All of the handouts are on the site. So when you go to the training call link, there should be two little, pretty little links that go to the PDFs. One is answers, one is fill in the blanks. Thanks there. And the Q&A was yesterday. So typically the Q&As are on Thursdays. All right. So before we get into today's call, which is going to be about three words, but really two words, but they mean the same thing. Coherence, which means flow. It's at the top of the handout, on the top right-hand corner. And then containment and capacity. So, coherence and flow, containment. I'm using my hands. I always use my hands when I'm teaching, and capacity. And this is, in many ways, while we're here to gain regulation, while we're here to heal our traumas and release stuff and heal things, it comes down to growing capacity and being able to contain, not trap, but contain our experience so we can handle it. For those of you that the image just came to my mind, if you play ball, any kind of ball where you have to catch a ball, right? You have to be able to catch that ball, hold it, and then pass it off. So containment is this ability to hold what we're feeling, not drop it, not go, oh, I can't hold this, you know, like that hot potato game that we played when we were kids, at least I did. It's to be able to hold it, feel it, and then know when to pass it off, meaning when to release it, when to digest it. In some cases, and we'll get to this in next week's training call, which is about somatic first aid, sometimes we have to hold on to something and not process it in the moment because we can't. This is important for those parents here. When your kids have something really stressful, you got to be a rock for them. And if you're freaking out, they'll freak out more. And so you got to have your freak out afterwards, right? And it depends, of course, on the age of the kid, but this ability to contain, that's one analogy for it. You got to be able to hold it, feel it, and then know when to move it over. So that's the theme today. We're going to really go into this. You'll see an image on this page. This depicts what I call a swimming pool. And beach balls, very simple but very effective for explaining capacity and stress that's in our body. And even with my most advanced students, we use this analogy over and over and over again. And it just simplifies things. So I'll get into that in a moment. But before we do, I just want to do a little bit of a practice. So some of you, again, you're new, you're just into maybe lab one. Maybe you're dipping into lab two a little bit, but the basics are so important. So, as we go through this theory, I really want to always portray the importance of staying embodied. And the reason why is for many of us in our old worlds of school, whether it was elementary, high school, college, technical school, anything where we're learning, often we're not connected to our body. We're just in our head. And while I can't imagine being connected to my body when I was doing calculus equations in university, my sense is I would have had a better experience if I was embodied in these learnings, and I probably would have retained more. So it is your job to all 145 of us here. When you're learning in these calls, even if it's one of the videos on the site, the biology of stress videos, if you're on a Q&A call with Seth, heck, if you're learning from someone else, you're on an online summit, you want to stay connected to this body of yours. And if you feel that you can't, then chances are that's time to take a break. Now, that might make it sound like, wow, I'm never going to get through anything because I have to keep taking breaks. So this is where you have to decide, do you want to override a little bit for the sake of getting the information in, or do you really want to take it slow and really titrate things? So everyone will be different. Those of us who have a lot more training, overriding from lots of educational systems, will be able to handle a little extra theory and not being always connected with our bodies. So you have to be the judge of that one. So let's just do what you have to do. If you need to move a bit, I'm going to move a bit. If you need to stretch, stand up, wiggle. So follow impulse. All this online learning, we're always focused, hyper-focused in one area. Typically, it's a screen. I'm fortunate I have a massive screen, so I don't have to pinpoint as much. But if you're on an iPad, a smaller laptop, a cell phone, we want to give our eyes a break and allow them to look out every now and again. So allow yourselves to do that. also sense that ground that's under you. You might be sitting on a chair. You might be sitting on a couch or sofa, or as my grandma would say, a Chesterfield. Who remembers that term? Yeah. Funny name. Chesterfield. Now I'm curious, where did that come from? You might be on a bed. Heck, some of you might be listening to this in a car. Maybe you're in public transit. So there's so many options. I don't want to assume where you are. Some of you might be lying down, all cozy and comfy. Maybe someone's making a grilled cheese sandwich, right? You're making dinner or lunch or something like that. So wherever you are and whatever you are doing, just sense that ground under you. And if you are shifting your weight a little bit, notice how the pressure changes. Are your eyes opened or closed? Open or closed. And just feel what feels right. For some of us, closing our eyes is a nice break from the input of the world. And for others, it isn't as nice because we don't see what's around us. It puts in a little bit of unsafety sometimes. So everyone's again going to be very different. And of course, depending on where you are, eyes closed might feel really lovely. Of course, if you're driving, you're not going to do that. So it's context specific. And just really sense your eyes. Because we're all at different times of the day. Some of us maybe compute a lot for our work. Some of us might have more manual work that we do where we're not focused as intently on something. And as you notice your eyes, how you might orient to the space around you, how you might follow your impulse, what do you notice with your breathing? My nervous system joke is that's the one thing I know you're all doing right now is breathing. Can almost pretty much 100% guarantee you're all breathing. Whether or not you sense the ground under you or the impulse appropriately, I can't know that for sure. Because that's your own perception and your own processing, and that's okay. That would be impossible for me to know how all of you are sensing everything around you. And then, if you've got that handout in front of you, can you feel it? The texture? Maybe you've got a desk in front of you. Maybe you're holding a pen. Maybe you're bored. So, this slowness is often very different when we go into a learning environment. But I really try to bring that in because we will speed up a little bit. And then your job is to keep coming back to these basics without me having to constantly prompt. But I will from time to time. So, let's get to it. Page one. So, I will speak this as if you've got the blanks and no answers. So, swimming pool and beach ball analogy, this is something I made up years ago, well over 8 years ago. If you've seen the Healing Trauma video series of mine that have been out forever, I'm much younger, not as regulated. If you want to see Irene less regulated, watch those videos. But of course, the information is still there. It's still accurate. and the videos are quite pretty. We put a lot of work into them. And those are on the SBSM website under additional resources. So they're there, but I'm going to do a little review. So, first thing, A at the top. So, the swimming pool, there's lots of lines there. I'm going to read these things out a couple times. So, it's your body. And one could say, when it comes to the body, that's everything. But for the sake of being full in all the things that are there, body, brain, your nervous systems. So we have more than one nervous system. Our organs, our tissues, that would be our muscles, our bone, our fascia. We'll be learning to work with the fascia later on in SBSM. We'll be learning how to work with the bone, the skin, really important tissues that respond to stress and they trap old stuff. If anybody's had an injury, you know how muscles get tight and fascia gets tight and bones can become kind of deadened when they've had shocks or breaks. So it's important for me to for me it's important for me for you to know that this trauma that we're talking about, it's not just in the nervous system, it is in the tissues. It's also in the joints. So all that is here. And then also within this swimming pool, sensations, emotions. The final thing could be everything inside of your body. Next one, B, below that image, the balls are your stress, or we could say stressors, and these are the words, past traumas, adverse events, shock traumas, early traumas, in utero traumas, the accident that happened yesterday, the bad news you got last year, all of the things that create a bit of a shockwave. Even if it's a mini shockwave into our system. So that's why in that picture I have different sizes, different balls. Some balls are like big boulders, others are little pebbles, but they all add up. Next line. C. So this concept of nervous system healing and growing capacity, it's all about more space. That's the next line there. It's all about more space, making a bigger pool, release and flow. In other words, I know this isn't multimedia, but if you could imagine that swimming pool moving, right? The balls moving. We could say when we're really stuck, when we're really frozen, when we're really collapsed, nothing moves. And it's also harder for those balls to move if you look at it when they're packed. Right? And this is obvious. If you were to pack up a pool with a bunch of beach balls and they're just jam-packed, you've got to kind of dig to get them out. But if there's less in there, you can just take them out really easily. Final line there on page one, D. So flow, which was sort of the title of this training call, flow is a simple word for coherence. Flow is a simple word for coherence. Coherence is this resonance, this ability for things to be moving, to be connecting, to have connection. For anyone here who does body work, some of you might be body workers, cranial sacral workers, even energy workers. And for those of you that receive that kind of work, a person can be breathing because obviously they're. Obviously, breathing when they're there on the table. But lack of coherence is when you touch a tissue and there's no life to it. It doesn't have juiciness to it. It's sort of blah, sort of dead. It is alive because obviously there's blood and there's flow, but it doesn't have an energy to it. It's almost like it's not animated with that person's sense of self. And when you start to open up and you start to bring more coherence, more flow to the body, this is why sometimes you sometimes can feel pain because things are opening up so quick. Has anybody ever felt a sharp pain around their heart and they wonder if it's a heart attack? And it's not. And obviously sometimes it is, but I've heard from folks when you have a heart attack, you know you're having one. It's intense, but there's these sharp pains we get. And what we think that is it's fascia around that part of the chest cavity opening up. But it takes our breath away because it can be very sharp. It can be very painful. But that is a sign, even when we open up flow, we can get what we might call bad sensations, but really it's a cue that, oh, there is something moving. There's something opening up. The other example I might give, have you ever fallen asleep on your arm at night? And of course, your brain wakes you up because it's smart, and your hand feels dead, like you can't feel it. But then as that blood flow comes back, it aches, it's painful. And that's the system bringing back flow to that area, and it's sort of reigniting the tissue. So lots of examples of how we start to feel more things when we get more flow in the system, more coherence. So let's go to page two. Yeah, and someone mentioned the aura in the chat. While I don't teach specifically aura and chakras, it's a thing I'm familiar with, and many of you are maybe familiar with. In osteopathic worlds, we might call it the electromagnetic spectrum that is around the body. And yeah, that can be punctured, that can be damaged from too much stress, from energies around us. I've experienced those myself. So yeah, our capacity goes beyond our physical body if we go deeper into Eastern traditions and Chinese medicine and such. All right, so you're going to draw something. So this is where you will need a pen or a pencil or something. Now, I've done this enough times to know that this will cause some stress in you, but not everyone. It's not important if you get this right. So I'm just going to say this right now. It's really simple. So I'm going to guide you through my voice to draw something, and it's not going to be the Mona Lisa. What it's going to be is four circles separate. So one circle, one circle, one circle, one circle. Just in a line. Really simple. Four circles. Four is not the magic number. I just choose four for whatever reason. You could have two circles and it would still fit. So you've got four circles on a line, like they're lined up on a table. And then what you're going to do is you're going to, within each circle, you know that infinity symbol, which is really an eight on its side? Draw an infinity symbol in each circle. And it doesn't have to be a certain shape, it's just in that. It could be, 12 o'clock to 6 o'clock, 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock, 2 o'clock, sorry. It doesn't matter. Just little circle in there, little figure eight, two circles. So what this is crudely depicting is we could say a cell of the body, or it could be an organ of the body. It could even be a human. And within each circle, you've got flow. And so obviously all of us are humans. We have billions of cells in us. Many organs, many glands, tissues, red blood cells. There's lots of circles in our body. Some things aren't as circular, but we want flow inside and we want flow within that system. And so then what you're going to do is you're going to do another figure eight to connect circle one and circle two. So you're just going to connect it with another. It's like you're doodling, just doing another little circle. Or not, sorry, circle. It could be a circle or it could be a figure eight. This is where creativity is allowed. You could have squiggles on your lines. They don't have to be straight lines. They could be squiggles. The key is that you're connecting one and two, and then connect two to three with another circle, another infinity sign. Bonus points if you use extra colors. And then 3 to 4. 3 to 4. So now you've got this string. It's almost like a beaded necklace in some ways that's flat. So you've got these circles connected by these little lines that are kind of like figure eights on the side. So they're chained up, they're linked up. We could say there's flow in between them. Yeah. And then connect, we would call it circle one with circle four, with a big long connection point above and below. And I mean, if you wanted to, you could get even more fancy and have circle two connect to the outside circle. There are no rules. The key is that you're getting kind of messy with circles and lines, you're breathing, and you're feeling that flow in between things. So, not too painful, hey? Hopefully that was fun. Having good flow, so the next line down below this, having good flow means good coherence. So we want flow within each circle and flow between each circle. So this ability to have constant all the time connection. Sorry, the sun's blinding me right now. I gotta move something here. There we go. So if we think about the body now, so come back to your own body, right? Has anybody here, since I had a headache earlier today or earlier this week, I'll use this example. Has anybody had, say, a body work session? And maybe the person works on your back or your lower back or your legs or even your neck, and you come away and you have a headache. Has anybody ever experienced that? Now, of course, there's lots of reasons for that, but having done body work myself and received it, sometimes what that is you're opening up things in the body beneath the crown of the head, this top part of the brain, and there's been a stuckness. The energy hasn't flowed properly out or down. And someone said, yeah, headache after reflexology. And so reflexology typically is the feet, but you also can do reflexology with the hands and the ears. And so if you're really opening up an area of the body and you're really focused on, say, the feet or the lower back that's sore or the shoulder that's injured, and the therapist really opens up that area really nicely. But you've not really paid attention to how that energy is flowing inside, maybe because it's just not something that's on your radar. That can lead where the energy is stuck in the head. And this is where understanding a little bit about energy centers can come in handy. This ability to move energy and feel the flow of energy going out. Now, of course, this takes practice, and you'll actually be learning some of that from the space of using what we would call the diaphragms when we get into later labs. Touching the head, you'll learn how to roll the head very gently to bring focus and energy to this top part of the skull, because it often gets left out. If there isn't anything actually going on in the scalp or the top of the head, most therapists don't go there. So I want to just use that example simply as we sometimes feel these things, but we don't connect it to lack of coherence and flow in the system. All right. So that is a bit on coherence. I'm going to take a little drink here. Everybody, use this moment to reconnect if you need to. The other story I'll share is someone mentioned reflexology. When I was a lot younger and I was working with all these injuries that I had, and I had no trauma background, I had no Feldenkrais background, I was really young, I went to see an acupuncturist. And I had full belief in the system, I believe in all methods of healing, all elements that are out there, but nothing shifted. I don't think it actually helped me at all. And it wasn't because the practitioner wasn't good. He was the best person in the town that I was in. I couldn't feel. I didn't have the ability to sense this flow in myself. So all I felt was like the prick of the acupuncture needle. I'm like, okay. Now when I get acupuncture, I can feel the opening of the meridian line. I can feel the change in my physiology. So there's so many great methodologies and modalities out there that we've invented over the centuries as humans and native cultures and such. But when we're not open and in flow, a lot of this stuff just kind of goes down the drain. It's the same with those of us who have been trying to heal, say, our gut, and we take supplements and we eat the best food ever, and we're still struggling. And it's often because the gut, and again, I'm being very general here, but typically isn't absorbing food in the way it should. It's not maybe breaking down food in the way it should in the stomach. It's not taking in the nutrition and the hydration in the way it should. And that's again because the system is not in good flow. It's not in good nervous system regulation. So, moving on, what is containment? Kind of use that, never used that example before, but the example of grabbing a ball when you're playing ball and holding it and really feeling it. Kind of like that. That's a very visual example of. I can contain what I'm sensing. I can hold it. I can feel it. I can be embodied with it. So the first line here, containment is staying embodied. That's the first word. Embodied and connected to the environment. That's the next word. And your internal state. While experiencing bodily experiences, sensations, feelings, images, thoughts, actions, behaviors, no matter how intense or activating. So, this ability to contain, to hold, to be with the things that are coming through, that's what containment is. And when we have more flow, so this is where these things piggyback of one another. When we have more flow in our system, what occurs is there's more space for these things to move through. If we think about who here has experienced tightness in the chest, and it's not a heart condition, right? It's what we would call anxiety, it's survival stress. The physiology is that that area is squeezing, it's getting tight, it's freaking out. And then, of course, that makes us more scared because we feel sensations that don't feel good. And then we get scared, and then we're down a rabbit hole of, I think I need to go to the hospital. And I would say there's no shame in doing that and getting checked out. But in talking to a lot of ER doctors over the years, they will say most of the chest pain when people come in, it's anxiety. It's panic. It isn't actually a problem. Now, of course, there are heart problems. Those are to be definitely treated and looked at and be aware of if there is something. But for many of us, it's this lack of flow. It's the stuckness. It's us swallowing our words, swallowing our emotions because we had to at some point. We had to hold it all in. Right? Whether it was the chest, the belly, the throat, even those of us who, well, not those of us, we all have psychic gifts, in my opinion, and intuition. But if we were told, don't be silly, don't tell us those crazy rainbow stories when we're young, we shut down the part of our body that, brings us that intuition. Some would call it the pineal gland, someone call it the third eye, right? But all these energy centers have physical space. And I heard the other day that someone said when she gets a headache, this is a teacher of mine, she knows that she's closing down her intuition. And so it's the system saying, hey, you're shutting something down up here in the forehead. You got to open it back up. So I'm just giving you some of these varying examples that I know many of us experience. So we want to grow this capacity. We want to make our swimming pool bigger so that these things don't get stuck. If we don't know that we have a pelvis down here and legs and feet and parts of our brain that are meant to be open and in flow, this is why we get stuck with a lot of stuff in our chest and our throat. As an aside, this is also really important for childbirth. If you have yet to have babies or you help women have babies, it is very difficult for natural birth to occur when there isn't good flow and coherence in the system. Areas get shut down, they don't open up, they're tight. There is an openness in the throat and in the chest. It's very hard. And the jaw is intimately connected to the hips. It's hard for natural birth to occur, or it can be very, very painful and very struggled. So I say this all in service of those beautiful circles you drew at the top of the page, that it can be transferred to so many things. It isn't just about stored trauma in one part of the body. We feel these things and know these things in many different ways throughout human life. Digestion, even, right? I'll give one more exa two more examples. Has anybody heard of something called cystitis? It's where the bladder gets really tight, very cramped, and it's difficult to pee, to urinate. You feel that you have to go to the bathroom, but there's nothing there. Also, those that have IBS, Crohn's, where there's this flip between high diarrhea and high constipation. It's very painful. This is all a lack of flow. I'm really oversimplifying this. Because when you get into the deeper lessons of the biology of stress, you'll learn how the sympathetic and parasympathetic systems are at odds with each other. They're fighting with each other. And when we bring in fluid, when we bring in food, we want that to go down in one direction, right? But we also want it to go down in a speed that works for our body and what's going on. So these are the things that occur when there's a tightness in the tissues, but also in the nervous system being dysregulated. We get these troubles with urination, with defecation, right? Acid reflux, that's a simpler example. A lot of people know it as GERD, where we have that acid that comes up, shouldn't go up. Acid should stay down, right? We want it to stay in our stomach. But when those valves aren't in good flow, it pops back up into our food tube called the esophagus, and it can be really problematic. So I'm just giving you these examples of how we see this in real life in physiological issues, right? So let's keep going. So to increase this flow, back to the handout, everyone, space, containment, and capacity, and have more chance for release, because at the end of the day, yes, we want to also release the stuff that we're holding in. We want to work and practice these six things. Now, you could circle six and say it's more than six, but for the sake of the first week that we're really together, or second week, I'm just going to name. It's really, when I would go through this, it's really seven things. But these are some of the main things we're going to work with in the first sort of 5 to 6 weeks of SBSM. Okay. So, number one, there's a big long list here, orienting. So, you've already learned this. This was in lab one. Orienting. Number two, awareness. You could add, this isn't on the answer page. You could say even general awareness. I've got the answer on the answers page says awareness, but it's just our general awareness. We could even add into that kind of our kinesthetic sense of what's around us. Number three, self-awareness. So, this would be our interoception. That's the fancy word that we'll get to later in the course. But just as a hint, everything we're doing is building up more interoception, more self-awareness. All of the lessons are in service of that. Four, following your impulse. I often like to say, add in your biological impulse. This is, that desire to rest, to move, to yawn, to burp, to pass gas, to eat when you're hungry, to not eat when you're not hungry. Just that practice alone can be monumentally groundbreaking for a lot of folks. The habit of I am supposed to eat now, as opposed to as my system actually needing food. That can take some time to figure out because of the way we've put rules and rewards around our culture of eating. Five. So these are two words that are going to be less familiar if you're really, really new here. Joints and diaphragm. So there's two words there. So literally the joints of our body, which is where bones come together. Right? The knee joint is our lower leg and our upper leg, our tibia and our femur coming together, for example. The wrist joint. There's a lot more bones. My anatomy is rusty. But you've got your two lower arm bones, the radius and ulna, coming in contact with all of the hand bones. That's called our wrist. Of course, we know our elbow. So joints are one thing we'll work with, and they're an area that can hold a lot of energy, a lot of emotion, a lot of trauma. Diaphragms, same thing. Now, for those again new, we think of the one diaphragm as that breathing diaphragm that's just below the chest, right? It's that big dome that goes down and up as we breathe. Now, that's what we would call the true diaphragm. But in osteopathic and craniosacral traditions, there are actually diaphragms from the top of the head all the way to the bottom of the feet. And they actually follow the Eastern traditions' energy centers for chakras. So there's diaphragms in the shoulder, the heart solar plexus is the true diaphragm, there's a pelvic diaphragm, there's diaphragms below, and there's diaphragms high up on the head. So again, if you are someone who has experienced craniosacral therapy or osteopathic work, you may or may not know this, but what the person is working with is often the diaphragms. And it's to open up that space and bring flow and energy to it. And then, of course, that's where we then find the old shock traumas, the old memories, the old sensations, the emotions can be trapped in there. So these are really important parts of our healing and learning, working with the joints and diaphragms. Six, this is sort of a hyphenated word in some ways. Kidney adrenal, kidney adrenal interface. Kidney adrenal interface. So, this is an area in our kind of mid to low back. And again, a little anatomy lesson. You've got two kidneys. I'm using my fist to show, and they're usually about the size of your fists. And it's where the kidney bean got its name, because our kidneys look like kidney beans. And on top of each kidney is this little gland called an adrenal gland. Many of you have heard of adrenaline, adrenal fatigue. That's that little guy. And that adrenal gland pumps out hormones, chemicals, adrenaline, cortisol, a few other things to alert us. So when we have fight flight, that little kidney adrenal interface goes pumping really, really quickly. It pumps, it secretes, and it works over time. One of the things that is unique, I think, to Smart Body, Smart Mind, is working with this kidney adrenal interface and the joints and diaphragms in service of getting ourselves out of a chronic stress response. So if you were to come to work with me privately when I was in private practice, or any of our colleagues who are trained to work with these levels, we would touch and we would work with this part of the body with intention. It isn't manipulation, it's not massage. It's just this gentle touch where we literally talk to these organs more psychically, more intentionally, and offer it space, offer them space, support, ease, and sort of say to that area, hey, you've been working really hard. I'm not going to say that you have to totally shut off because we need you, but what would it be like to just be a little less on all the time? And that's a part of what we start to work with when we get into lab four with the kidney and adrenals. Joints comes in lab three, just as an FYI. Diaphragms, lab five. So these things are kind of being laid in so that we can start really working at this level of the stress physiology, the stress physiology. So again, this work often gets mistaken for just orienting and following impulse and containment, but the real meat and potatoes working with these diaphragms, these joints, the kidney adrenals. And then when we get into later labs, we will work with the gut, the brain stem high up here, and the connection between the gut and the brain through that vagus nerve. So lots of juicy stuff to work with. And we want the kidneys and adrenals to actually be juicy. When they've been worked too much due to stress, early trauma, in utero trauma, they literally like lose their life. While we don't have actual footage of this, when you work with someone who's had a lot of stress, it's almost like the organ isn't there. It's like dried up like a raisin. And so when it starts to get energy, you actually feel these little spurts of fluid starting to move, and it gets its juice back. It's like a dry sponge. If you've ever, dry sponge that you use to clean up counters, you put water in it, it gets nice and juicy, it gets spongy. That's what we want our organs to be. Back to your circles, we want that flow. So, okay, I'm going to pause. Let's go to page three. I just said a lot, so let your system move a little bit if you have to. I'm again going to move myself. For those of you who know, you are in the midst of healing early stuff where there was a lot of stress chemistry running your show. It's possible that as you hear this, your body is reacting, maybe. I don't want to put that into anybody's minds. And I see a few people nodding. Feel free in the chat to say, yep, I'm feeling that. This is why you can do this work with yourself, because the intention is what is powerful. Again, it's not about manipulation, it's not about massage. Those are all very important practices for some people. But for this level of nervous system regulation, it's more about the energy and the intent. Just like you can hold a baby and say you're safe and rock it, but if the person rocking the baby and saying you're safe is not safe in their own system, the baby isn't going to feel safe. And this is why some people are so confused when they know their parents didn't hit them, they didn't abuse them. They got all the food and shelter, but I came out really anxious, right? So a mother can be, and a father can be loving and good and doesn't want to hurt little one at all. But if they have this underlying stress chemistry, that intention gets pushed into the little one. And this is why sometimes it can be super confusing on how to work with that stuff. And this is how we work with it. All right. Oh, interesting. Camille said, I've seen this firsthand as a neo, I'm assuming it's a neonatal intensive care unit nurse. Yes. Yeah. Okay, yeah, and the 7 points were there were six lines, right? I think so. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But line five has two things, joints and diaphragms. I think I did my math right there. So, yes, an intention. Is that what you mean by co-regulating with yourself? Not kind of. Yes, and so co-regulating is where we might find a resource. So the resources were taught in lab one. So I've always liked my hot, warm tea. I can hold a resource and with that go inside and feel that resource internally. And that would lead me to co-regulate eventually with myself. Containment exercises, noticing your breath, having a memory that comes up that's lovely. That would be a co-regulating with yourself, whereas intention is directing what's internal. We can have an intention, but it doesn't necessarily lead to co-regulation. And I don't want to get too nitpicky there. And you are right, Michael. We can have intention and imagine and visualize our kidneys lowering, and this is what you'll learn. I like to give the analogy that they're in a nice warm salt bath and they're just floating in this beautiful, warm, salty water, which is essentially kind of what they're in when they're in the blood of our body. So I give that intention, and then with that, our system can feel a shift. The adrenaline comes down, and then we feel a Now, I would be remiss if I don't say also when we've been stuck in so much survival physiology, we can have the intention to bring our system down, and then it comes down, and then the system feels a little bit of like a literally a drop of more safety. Where do you think I'm going with this, guys? I'm quizzing you. Aha. Kirsten from the Netherlands said it. Ooh, that feels scary to me. Yeah. If we have been caught and stuck in a fight flight, I gotta protect, defend, wear my Shira armor suit all the time, and then we take off that armor internally, we're raw. You know, we're exposed. And so this is why it's very important that you also understand that when we go into more deeper states of true parasympathetic rest, we might have this upswing where the system is fighting for that survival again. And that's totally normal, by the way. And then this is where you bring in your tools. I'm going to resource now. I'm going to get up and go for a walk. I'm going to put on my favorite, hip hop song or whatever and dance, right? Like that's where then you know. Okay, I got to do something to soothe this little person who isn't so sure that it's good, it's safe, right? You know, theoretically, nothing is in your room getting you, but it's that early trauma that had to hold on and stay so intensely focused on safety and protection. You'll get to this in video number four, Biology of Stress video number four. I talk about this level of early trauma. And it's just really important to understand. This is why the knowledge and the theory is so important. So you know that you're not doing it wrong, right? And again, often what is not taught in other quick fix ways of trying to quote unquote regulate the nervous system, there's all these other elements. So let's get into page three. Three. So I'm going to go through all these a little bit more, but I've already gone through them quite a bit. My style of teaching you guys is to review and review until you're sick of me reviewing. So I'm not going to apologize, but maybe I will. I think it's really important to hear things over and over again. And if you feel like, oh, I already know this, watch that thought and use that to just kind of sit back, listen, and see what comes up. So the first one here, orienting. So again, this is that concept of looking around, of seeing what's in our internal, external environment. Orienting can be, and this isn't on the handout, I'm just speaking freely here. Orienting can be exploratory, like I'm so blessed, I have trees outside of my window here, and that's what I see. So that's what I'm always looking at. But sometimes on this street that I live on, because we live more rural, there are very loud dirt bikes that go up our road. And when I hear those engines rev, I have a little bit of a, ooh, right? And I wait because it's really loud and I can't hear myself think. So that's a very simple example of defensive orienting. Now I know that dirt bike isn't gonna, hop our fence and come into my office, but I hear it, it startles me a little bit. Defensive orienting would also be if we go back to the example of the ball. Remember when I was talking about the ball, catching the ball? If you don't see that ball coming and it hits you in the head, you are not able to defensively orient and protect your head, for example, right? So orienting has two purposes. One is to allow us to see beauty in what is around us, and it can help us soothe, but we also need it so that we stay safe. And if we have grown up in a world where the environment was unsafe, and there are lots of reasons for that, it doesn't have to just be physical abuse, but it can be, we will have often a hypervigilance to what is outside of us. And we want to tone that down if there really isn't any more vigilance. And this is very common. With folks who come back from war, for example. I have two very good friends who are retired military, and you see when they talk about things that there's a defense, right? They're on this protection. They're waiting for the thing to fall out of the sky. They're waiting for the thing to blow up in front of them. They've been blown up in things, and so that gives them a defense. It's natural too, because their systems are trying to protect. So there's all sorts of ways that we get stuck in defensive orienting, and we want to slowly peel that off of our nervous system so that we're not defensively orienting to things that we shouldn't be defensively orienting to. This is where we snap at things that we shouldn't, right? This is where we overreact. This is where people get triggered and get defensive, get reactive. It's because typically we're still stuck in these defensive orienting and trauma response patterns. So that's my extra bit on orienting, because it's more than just looking around. It's quite complex. So it's important for me to start dripping some of those complexities in. But for the sake of this exact line on the handout on top of page 3, I'm talking about pleasant orienting, exploratory orienting. So orienting that is exploratory and pleasant sparks up the social engagement nervous system. Social engagement nervous system, which is the ventral vagal portion. So that's a big word there, three words. Ventral vagal portion of the parasympathetic nervous system. For those that speak French, ventral just means ventre, the front, and it's because when the vagus nerve comes out of the brain, it comes from the front of the brain stem. So front of the brain stem, which is still behind where I'm pointing on myself. And it goes to the face, goes to the heart, goes to everything above the lung, the lungs. And as we look, as we see, even as we hear pleasant sounds, speaking. This is why one of the most important things for first responders, I'm curious, are there any first responders here? What do you do when you walk up to a scene and you know that it's safe? Of course, safety first, right? You find someone on the scene, you talk to them. What's your name? What's your name? What happened? My name's so and so. I'm here to help you. And you try to get, you see if they can talk. If a person can't talk, they're in shock. But by trying to get them to talk a little bit, it actually sparks up that ventral vagal portion of the nervous system. Yeah, orient with the scene and then the people. Exactly. Number two. So again, I said this is more of a global awareness, a general awareness. So this is with the world and your environment. The reason I parse this out from orienting is I can be aware that a car just drove up the road. I can be aware that Seth, my husband, isn't here right now, but I know he's coming home in a moment, so I might hear a door unlock. So that's a general awareness, but like when he comes in, I'm not gonna orient to him because I'm expecting that sound. So this ability to have general awareness, as my military friends would say, situational awareness, right, is important. Now, because I like action movies and some of you might as well, I'm going to throw this in for fun. Who here's watched the Jason Bourne movies? You know, he walks in and he knows everything. The exits, how heavy people are, people's limps, all the things. That is situational awareness, but that is hypervigilance. That is defensive orienting. He ain't calm. In that situation, I would not want to try to work with his kidney adrenals, right? He is on alert, focused, hyper aware, but it is a defensive, vigilant awareness. And we need to have some of that too. When we drive, we are meant to be defensively orienting. And people get these days a little too comfortable in their cars, right? You never want to go at a light before you look both ways, even if the light is green. I hope everyone knows that. I always like to say that, right? Just because it's green doesn't mean you should go. You want to defensively look. You're supposed to look in the rearview mirror before you hit the brakes, no matter what. Someone right behind me. That is healthy defensive orienting, right? You walk outside. Oh, feels a little colder today. Oh, there's ice on the street. I've worked with so many people who are so stuck in their traumas and unaware that they slip on familiar driveways every year because they forget to feel that it's more frozen outside and then they hurt themselves. So, again, little examples of where we add in this awareness with more accuracy and we get safer. Because we don't get into accidents in the same way, because we're really aware of our surroundings. Three, self-awareness. So this is with yourself, first word there, and your insides, also known as your interoception. So yourself, your insides, also known as your interoception. Now, the interesting thing with this one is as we build more capacity and more coherence, flow, and we can contain things and feel them and release them, this interoception becomes sharper and we trust it more. When we have still a lot of stored trauma and dysregulation, we might get cross-wired signals from our interoception. That sort of says, you should panic about this. You know, it's that tightness in the chest that I talked about. It can lead us down a bit of a rabbit hole versus, ooh, I feel some tightness. I'm just gonna neutrally feel it. I'm gonna feel it. It's uncomfortable. I'm gonna feel my ground. I'm gonna feel my sense of feet. I'm gonna let my breath do what it wants to do. I'm not gonna try to breathe away the tightness. Often, when we do that, when we really feel that internal sense with neutrality, and that's the key here, when we have a history of attaching meaning and emotion to things and thinking, and often it's awfulizing, we then give it more, it gets stickier and it gets trickier. And this would be another part of our process here is trying to be as neutral as possible. I often say, Emotions are neutral by design. Emotions are neutral by design. Now, some have some heat to them because it's anger or there's grief or collapse because of, the sense of sadness. But they're also neutral in that if we don't give them more energy, they actually come out of our system a lot faster. But of course, because of life and culture and society, we've labeled a lot of these emotions and sensations, and that's what you'll soon learn is emotions are purely sensation. We've labeled them with good, bad. Girls do those, boys do those, right? I think that's starting to be seen that no, everybody has all the emotions, just like the animals in the wild who are mammals also have all those emotions, right? The difference between us and those animals is they're not thinking about why their chest is, well, they probably don't have tight chests because that stuff stores in us because of our thinking, but they're not thinking, why am I roaring at this hyena that's trying to get my cubs? They're just roaring and protecting their young. They're hunting for food. They're finding shelter because it's instinctual. And so they have a simpler life in some ways, one could say, because they don't have this higher brain who's attaching, that's attaching meaning to all these things. Now, primates are a little different, but we won't go there today. So interoception, super important in many ways, in addition to growing capacity and regulation and coherence. We're trying to really master our interoceptive sense. This is also where our intuition comes from. Our gut sense, our sixth sense is in the gut. It's this interoception. Okay, next one, following impulse. Following impulse. I'll just answer this because it popped up. So Kristen asks, will there be a lesson about which sensations belong to which emotions? Not really. No. You don't have to, I'll say this quite directly, there's no need to identify them. And I'll actually speak to this. I've noticed a trend in a lot of parenting, and this is just my opinion, but I've seen a lot of kids and I've worked with a lot of kids and parents with kids. I was once a kid. And often there's this thing now where people are like, how do you feel? Tell me how you feel. What's happening? Like this over therapizing of what's going on in a toddler or a 5-year-old system, as opposed to, let's do this. Do you want to do this? Like, yes or no, approach avoid. Do you like that person? Do you not like that person? Does this kid like running and playing on these things, or are they more of an artistic person? Right? Like, there's something about how we're starting to overanalyze what's going on. And really, when we're given opportunity to be more primal when we're little, and all of you, of course, are adults, and I'm encouraging us all to be more primal with our impulses. And when we get into healthy aggression, you're going to make sounds and we're going to bare our teeth and all these things. It's this ability to get back into that juiciness of just human biology. And when we do that and we stop overthinking what these emotions mean, the emotions, and this is why I often say they're neutral by design, they just come out of us way more better, just easier, right? Because you might not know, I am feeling this heat in my chest. And someone might say, that means anger. Because there's that heat map that kind of is popular with all these different colors of the body. I don't look at that stuff because you might have heat in here, and that could be the energy of immense stored grief. And often that is what it is. It's the holding back of tears, but it looks really hot and intense. But it's because of the energy you're needing to hold it under. So yeah, I think as you get into this deeper, you're really gonna, I hope, have fun with the neutrality of what comes up. And again, back to the body, back to the sensation, back to the impulse. It cuts all the crap out, in my opinion. So, now, if someone is really, really frozen and has not experienced any emotional variance, sometimes it helps. Like, oh, you're feeling irritated? Well, that's actually anger's cousin. Like, irritation is the sign that you're starting to feel a bit more angry. That's good, right? Okay. I don't want to harp on that too much more. Four. So this actually follows nicely into interoception. Follow your impulses, listening to your body's organic needs. What does it need? What does it want? What does it crave? Now, of course, for those who have had trouble overeating with addiction, this is again another topic that is important to understand that, yeah, you don't want to binge and harm your body with impulse that is not healthy, but it's also important to know why is that impulse there to binge, to have this addiction. I'm not the person who's going to say go cold turkey and stop, but the question is how can you understand where that need is coming from? Usually it's a form of self-soothing, usually it's unconscious. And a lot of the times, when we become more conscious with our choices, we actually start to make better choices, right? So, following impulse, super important. For me, this is body, this is food, rest, temperature changes, needing to warm yourself up, needing to cool yourself down, needing to move, needing to emote, needing to connect, etc. Number five, joints and diaphragms. I already kind of did a pretty comprehensive of this, but I will just repeat and get these answers in. So I call them little containers and spaces that need to be open. That's the first word, open and resilient and in flow. Open, resilient, and in flow. Six. Kidney adrenal interface. So again, as I noted on previous page, this is the primary organ system that goes on alert. That's the word alert. And reacts severely in a stressful situation. Reacts severely in a stressful situation. We work with the kidney adrenal interface so that we can stop the system from hurting. That's the word, hurting and scaring itself. What I mean by that, and this is where, again, I make the assumption that you're living in a space that is fairly contained. You have a home, a roof over your head. I hope that you're living with people, if you are living with people that are not abusive, but I know that's not always the case when we start out this work. We also might not think that what we're in is abusive until we start this work. Might be in a job that is stressing us out that isn't good. So there's lots of different scenarios here. So when we work with this kidney adrenal interface, we're making a little bit of an assumption that the threat and the main stressor isn't there anymore. And so we're working to recover and restore safety in your system. One of the best examples I can give is folks who take in pets who have been abused. We call this, we rescue a pet, we take them in. We need to be very diligent with those animals and very consistent and very calm. We can't make any sudden movements, right? We have to understand what they like, what they don't like, so that their system can start to come down and trust us. In some ways, that's what we're doing with ourselves. We're really reteaching, huh? Wow, I don't have to be defensive anymore. Why am I doing that? That was from what I had to do with my mom or my dad or my school teacher or whatever, my siblings, or common one. I know this with my grandma. She grew up in the wars, and even to the point where, not too long before she went into assisted living, she had three deep freezes in her basement filled with food. Why? Because she lived through depression where there was no food, right? So you had to squirrel away as many frozen pies and as many bones of everything. And if someone had extra apples, you took them and you froze them. There was no need for it, but it was living out of the past, right? Now, I'm not saying don't have some extra supplies, but her and my grandpa did not need three deep freezes, So, and I was the only grandchild. So that's an example again of how we bring our past with us. And it's like, do I really need this attitude, this behavior, this way of being? This is old, or this is what I was taught. So oddly, the kidney adrenal interface interacts with some of these old defensive patterns that we might not realize. And they're there to protect us. And often they're there because it protected our ancestors and our family system. Next line down is it can take up to, and what I'm about to say is general, but this was sort of what I was taught, so I repeat it. It can take up to 2 years to recover and repair this circuitry, even after the stress or stimulus is gone. And I'm being generous here. And as you get to know me and Seth a bit more, and he shares stories, and we've talked about these stories in different videos, it was 7 years before he felt safe in the house with me. And it wasn't because I was harming him. It's because I represented someone in his space. And when he was young, the people in his space were abusive. And so he always had to be on alert, always. And so it took time to trust, I can take a nap in the middle of the day with Irene walking around the house, right? He couldn't lay down without having a little bit of like that one eye open, sleeping with one eye open, we would call it. So, he had, when I met him, complex PTSD, the same kind of PTSD you would think someone fighting in a war would have, right? Because he kind of grew up in one. In some strange way, not exactly, but the stress physiology doesn't know the difference. That's what's very important to understand. Because we try to say, oh, well, that person's trauma was worse because they were in this, and this person's trauma wasn't as bad because they went to soccer practice every Sunday and had tons of food to eat. But what's happening at the physiological level is identical. Fear is fear. Protection is protection. And so this is why working with that kidney adrenal interface is so important, because we're literally laying down the request of maybe just consider it isn't as scary as you think it is, right? So that's kind of what we're working with these kidney adrenals. It is not a one-stop shop thing. You don't do that lesson once and go, ah, it didn't work. When I was in private practice, I would do kidney adrenal work with some clients for 5 years. It was very, very monotonous, mundane work. Just like if you have a baby, it's very monotonous, mundane work. It's joyful and you have fun, but it's also a routine that is very, very stringent because they need that consistency. That's what creates co-regulation and self-regulation. So in some ways, or in many ways, we're doing the exact same thing with ourselves, but just as adults, right? So we're being the intentional factor that is the same and consistent. All right, page four. Let's go to page four. So back to the swimming pool and beach ball analogy. So we'll come back to this. So the first line there, the many balls packed in the pool, as I've already mentioned, represent the stressors and toxicities stored within the body. Now I'm being very vague, but there's all sorts of things that we can have in our body that cause us to have dysregulation. So that's the next word. This is nervous system dysregulation. All these balls in the pool, crowding out our system, and it's a lot to take in. I have that word toxicities in there because it's becoming more known that there are a lot of toxins in our world that we hold and trap in our tissues, and they're not good for us. And the system can go into dysregulation when we have a heavy toxic load in our system. We know this through all sorts of things that are quite prominent right now in the popular press. But yeah, if someone, I was one of these people, I had chemical trauma in utero as a baby and throughout my childhood and teenage years, and my system was under constant chronic stress from chemicals that I was around. I was raised in an animal hospital. I'll talk about this a bit more as we get into the training calls. So my little system was overpacked with toxins when I was born. I was full of them. And so it isn't always trauma at the hands of parents being neglectful. I really want to be clear with that. The other one that can be quite unknown is if you had surgeries when you were a baby. Okay, like we forget about these things because we're walking, we're able, but if you had to have a surgery, maybe there was something that was, orthopedically not right, maybe there was a valve not right somewhere, and you had to be away from mother in a sterile space, that can create a lot of survival stress. And it's something that I always like to add because we forget, oh yeah, I was casted from my pelvis down for the first year of my life. I've met many people who never think about these things, but it impacts the physiology. So many balls, back to the handout, means number one, old survival stress. Old survival stress, also known as trapped trauma. Trapped trauma. Two, chronic daily stress. Think that's just a given in our current day and age. Some of us might have more of it than others. I've also learned through my own journey that we can add stress to our day when we don't have to, because habit tells us we should be stressed. So we try to do more than we should, and then we overdo it, and then we collapse at the end of the day, right? So this ability to really judge, like, am I really chronically stressed in my day because of work and this, or am I just trying to mimic what my system is used to from childhood? We see these patterns carry on in families. So chronic daily stress is a thing. That could also fall into having to get up every day in the dead of winter, to an alarm clock and you just want to sleep. That's a stress. If your body's not ready to get up, you're going to be tired, right? And then, of course, we do things to keep us alert throughout the day. Three, biological impulses that aren't followed. So this actually piggybacks off of what I just said. So number three there, biological impulses that aren't followed. If we think back to that diagram of the circles and flow, if we need to cry, if we need to speak up, if we need to, I'll make it really simple, we need to pass gas and we hold it all in, that puts strain on the system, right? And so this ability to really start to be more biological is super important when we do this work. If you're in a relationship where you don't feel comfortable passing gas in front of your partner, you got to work on that. I'm going to be really honest, right? You have to be comfortable in your own home. I'm not saying, go and be rude and crude when you're at your work site or something like that. But, I once met someone who said she had to be reminded by her assistant to go pee to take a break because she just locked in and just worked and worked and worked and completely negated what her body needed. Not good. I'm on page four. I'm on page four. It's a long list there, one to five. Four, not letting emotions out. So this also piggybacks with biological impulses that aren't followed. But again, it comes back to us honoring what we feel sensorially in our body and seeing if there is an emotion, an anger, a sadness, a cry, a grief that needs to come out. Again, when we have been trained to keep that stuff in, it's like I always like to say, it is like learning a second language. Learning a second language. We're not going to get it in the first year. We have to keep practicing. Some people are having confusion. Am I like on the wrong page? Looks like this, you guys. Let me move my video. No? I wonder if something got funky in our. Tell you what, don't stress. We'll figure it out. I'm saying all the same things I just said. It's not a big deal. Something must have got funny in there. All of this is very similar. Yeah, we've got this pool. We've got all these beach balls inside. The more we hold in our impulses, our emotions, we don't let things out, we don't speak up, we don't cry, we trap more of those balls inside. And we just don't want that, right? Then the final letter there, B, and maybe some of you don't see this, but imagine, if you will, the pool now has an opening. Okay, on my handout, there's a little slit. So imagine ball coming out, ball coming out. That's the release. So that would be the release of emotion. That would be the feeling of sensation. That would be the speaking up. Like the other day, I was in a training call with my mentees, and I could sense someone wanted to say something. And I was opening up the floor to these 24 or so students. Like, does anybody want to share anything? Because we had summer off, and I'm like, okay, who here is feeling their heart rate race and they want to share? And one of our students, Anna, was like, that's me. She's like, I don't know what I have to say, but my heart rate is pounding and I know I have to. I'm like, great. Well, what's going on? And then there was all this stuff that she wanted to share, but she didn't realize she wanted to share it. Right. So, again, how are you holding back your voice, your opinion? Preferably don't do that on social media. Just when you're in with people that you know, that you love, that you care about, if you're sitting at a table with work and you have an opinion, you feel that little thing, like experience it, sense it, say, yeah, I feel like I have to say something. So, all right, page five, which is the page I have. I think my eyes are reading this right. So, again, imagine this pool. On my handout, the very top is the letter C. We want to create more exits. We want to create more exit paths to release the balls. So, I often give the example. Let's just say tomorrow, I hope this doesn't happen to you, but let's say tomorrow you stub your toe on a coffee table. Or you burn your hand on the hot stove. It hurts. Rather than stuffing that in, ignoring it, and being pissed off, what do you think you should do? Again, granted it's safe to do so, and your infant isn't crawling over something, and you can be there by yourself. Rather than holding that pain in and swallowing it, you pause, maybe you sit down, maybe you stay standing. And you let that feeling, that sensation move through. That would be an example of opening up the pool, letting a ball come out. In that moment, it's a current stress, right? You burn your finger, you stub your toe. It's a current stress. What is odd and what will occur often is when we start being with these stressors in current time, right? Because we can't go back in time. But as we start to do this in current time, one might find that they stub their toe. The toe isn't broken. It's just a little, maybe you crack your toenail or something. It's a nuisance. It hurts. And you start wailing tears of grief and convulsing. And you're like, this doesn't add up to this little stub toe. But what that is, that stub toe is a proxy for all the times that maybe you hurt yourself and you didn't have the space or the care or attention from, say, your parents to say, oh, it's okay. You know, that constant, you fall off your bike, you're told, get back up on it, you're fine, be a big boy, be a big girl, you know, smile for mommy, all these things, keep going, keep going. That harms us slowly over time. So as you start to get into really feeling these exit paths, you might be shocked at what comes up with these tiny little things, and it's completely normal. Completely normal. So, D, we also want to make space in general. So that example of stubbing the toe is how we can create more exit paths in current world. But oddly, when we create more space, and if you've got my handout, D, we want to create more space in general. Creating these exit paths also creates more space. They go hand in hand. Because the moment you don't allow that sensation to be trapped in the system, you created more space. So they go back and forth. And so now, on my little picture, the pool has gotten bigger. The balls are the same amount. Trust me, we counted, but they have more space. And when they have more space, they're easier to find inside. And when they're easier to find, they're easier to release, right? So space basically means more capacity, more capacity. And I'm just going to read this and then you can go back to the handout and see the answers. Apologies that we have a glitch here. But capacity means to be able to sense and be with your system. Again, this is the ability to contain what's there, the ability to experience and emote emotions, notice what is happening on the inside, be with the stress outside of you while also feeling your internal experiences. One of the things that I think keeps many of us from going out in the world is the environment overwhelms us. And so it overwhelms us, so we stop going out in the environment because we feel too much internally. Yeah. And so as we grow more capacity, we can sense what's going on inside and not shut down while being in the, say, external world. Those who say suffer from social anxiety, this would have been my husband Seth, will say it just he was crippled. He couldn't be around people. It was too much, and within an hour he had to go back to his little cabin and hide and self-soothe, right? Totally different now, but it took this slowly building of capacity and taking out the old balls, the old traumas, the old stressors to build up that capacity to feel what's inside and still see and experience what's going outside and have it not overwhelm his system. The other one is when we have more capacity and more space, we can think more clearly, right? Because when we're not focused on survival constantly, the brain has a chance to not be focused on survival, which then allows the actual cognitive functions to do what they're supposed to do. And we know this with kids now, and some of you might have been that kid. You couldn't focus in school. You couldn't pass a test. You couldn't get through a book because your system was looking for the danger, looking for the tiger, right? So, this ability to get out of survival physiology will allow us to be able to focus more and clearly think. One of your peers, actually, she's an alumni. I just got an email from her over the summer. I think she's in her mid-50s, late 50s. She just completed her bachelor's of education degree after trying for 38 years to get a degree, and she couldn't in her 20s, 30s, and 40s because her survival physiology was too high. but it was really her passion was to be an elementary school teacher. And now she is. I've talked about it with her on my YouTube channel. Bernadette is her name. And she said, I couldn't focus. I thought I was stupid. I wasn't stupid. I was traumatized. And now that that is out, she was able to, study and apply and get her degree. So for those of you that think, ah, I'm not that smart person, a lot of people are like, oh, I'm only a visual learner. Oh, I'm only an odd. I believe that we all have the capacity to learn multiple ways. We just get focused because it's something that's easier. And so we say, I'm a this. But as I see more of you heal and grow, we all have multiple learning capacities. There's a reason why we have ears and eyes, and like it's all there, and it really does start to bubble up when we gain this capacity and get out of survival stress. And then the final line there is the best scenario is to have lots of exit paths and lots of space. So we want to constantly be recycling. Don't hold on to the new stuff that comes in, let it go, process it. When old stuff comes up, use that as an opportunity to really work with it, because it's presenting. Things will present to you when the system is ready. And so I will say, watch out, because as you grow your capacity, as we move forward, it will seem maybe a little disorienting because you'll feel things and experience things that might seem totally strange and not normal. And usually that's a good sign. It's a sign that you're sensing things that you have not been able to sense because the capacity of your system, your swimming pool was too small and there were too many balls in that pool. So that is my swimming pool and beach ball analogy. It's amazing we can talk about that for over an hour and a half. Thanks for, we went a little over today, had a few more stories. We'll figure out what happened to that handout. Perhaps I have an old, no, my version says 2024. So maybe something got uploaded on the site, which was old and it didn't get updated. So apologies. We'll figure it out. These things happen. Not a big deal. All the information will be there in the answers. And I'll see you guys again, on Tuesday for the next call. We'll double check to make sure they're right. But we'll go into building capacity in somatic first aid on Tuesday. And obviously, Seth will have another call on Thursday. Be good to yourselves. Be gentle. Take it easy. Have fun. Listen to some old favorite music. And we'll see you next week, everyone. Thank you, Leah and Susan, for hanging out with me today. It was a fun call. And we'll see you next time. Bye.